Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation outside the 12th Hour. In the Elgin, Texas, today is March the 2nd, 2024. It is 8/22/2027. We're going to continue. We're going to start our first service on the Sabbath day with a song entitled, What a Friend We Have in Yahshua. What a friend we have in Yahshua. What a friend we have in Yahshua. All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Yah in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. What need to stand we bear? Oh, because we do not carry everything to Yah in prayer. Have we trials and temptation? Is there trouble anywhere? We shall never be discouraged. Take it to the Yah in prayer. And we find a friend so faithful, who will all our sorrows share. Yahshua knows every weakness. Take it to the Yah in prayer. All ye weak and heavy laden, comfort with the load of care. Precious Savior, still our refuge, take it to the Yah in prayer. Who that first despised for our safety, take it to the Yah in prayer. In His arms He'll take and shield thee. Thou wilt find the soul to stand. Our prayer thought is taken from Revelation chapter 11. Start with verse 1. And there was given me a reed like unto a rod. And the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of the Yahweh. How you measure the temple today to fulfill this statement would be numbering the 144,000 in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's how you measure the temple today. You got an exact number. Measure means the number. So it says, rise and measure the temple. In other words, rise and measure the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And it's four square. 1440 means four square. Puts a couple of three zeros on that 1440 and you've got 144,000. Okay, now, multiply 24 hours a day times 60 minutes to an hour and you get 1440. 1440, anyway. It all comes out four square. So now, it says, rise and measure the temple and the altar. Now, the altar means it's inside the temple. The altar that's inside the temple means this is your sacred lectern where the ministers, the preachers, preach from every week. It says, if you have an inspired minister that is preaching from the pulpit of the Adventist Church every week, and you'll find out that you don't have, but you will have once you measure the 144,000, because they're going to be the only ones that's going to be allowed to preach from that sacred lectern, which is called, they call the pulpit. Pulpit means to pull it down on top of you into the pit for teaching false doctrine. That's what the name pulpit was named for. It means to pull the pulpit down on top of your head into the pit. That's what pulpit means. In other words, it was originally called the sacred lectern. But those Jesuit devils from those general conference, they said, no, let's call it the pulpit. We're going to pull that altar down on top of our heads into the pit. That's why it's called pulpit today. That's what they've done. But the court, which is without the temple, now the court, remember the sinner in Israel, whenever he committed the sin, he was seen coming from afar off leading a lamb. He put a rope around the lamb's neck, and he either led him or carried him to the outer court of the temple, in the outer court, and that's all the further the sinner could come. And he brought that lamb up to that altar at the outer court, and he slit his throat, and the priest in the first department would come out that door, and he'd come out there and catch that blood from that lamb for the sinner. And he would take the blood back into the temple. The sinner was not allowed to go into the blood with that blood, into the temple of the blood. It was only the priest was allowed to carry that blood. Then he'd take it back in and he'd officiate for that sinner inside the temple. But this is what we're talking about here in Isaiah 11. A latter-day prophecy for the Adventist church has got to repeat the same kind of symbolism. But the court, which is without the temple, it's outside of the Seventh-day Adventist church, leave out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles. So everything outside of the temple is given unto the Gentiles worldwide. Now keep in mind that Paul said in Ephesians chapter 3, he said to those Gentile Ephesians, he said, we are brethren, we are kinfolks, we are made nigh by the blood of Yahshua. In other words, he told those Gentile Ephesians, we are kinfolks, we are brethren. So that's what Revelation 11 is talking about. These Gentiles are brethren to the 144,000 Judaites, Hebrewites. So it says, is given unto the Gentiles out of court. And the holy city, which is the Seventh-day Adventist Church purified, which would be after it's purified the 144,000, that then it's called the holy city. But before Yeshua comes and purifies the Adventist Church, that the first harvest of the 144,000 is not called the holy city. It is called a sinful city. Believe it or not. But once it's sanctified, it's called a holy city. Shall they tread underfoot 42 months? When these Gentiles come forth, bringing their sin offering, they're going to tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months, 3.5 years in our day. Now, we got to find a time of this 3.5 years and the Antitype takes place. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in a sackcloth. Okay, verse 4. These are the two olive trees. What? These two witnesses and the two candlesticks standing before The Yahweh, standing before the Yahshua, the Son of the Earth. Now, we're going to turn now to Zechariah chapter 4, and we're going to read about the prophecy that talks about these two witnesses, the two olive trees, and the two candlesticks. Okay? All three of them. We're going to find out now in Zechariah 4 the prophecy on this. Now, in Zechariah chapter 4, he says, "And the angel that talked with me came again and waked me as a man that is waking out of his sleep and said unto me, What seest thou? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick all of the gold." Candlestick. One candlestick. All. It's all of gold. With a bowl upon the top of it. Okay. So now this is the tenth candlestick mentioned in the Bible. Alright. We'll learn about that, more about that a little later. "And his seven lamps thereon, and his seven pipes to the seven lamps which are upon the top thereof. And two olive trees by it. One upon the right side of the bowl, and the other upon the left side thereof. So I answered and spake unto the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my master? Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, You know what? I'm going to tell you something. You're going to find out that this angel that talked with Zechariah here in verse 5 is Yahshua himself. He's this angel. It says so there. In Zechariah 12:8, you can find confirmation of that in Zechariah 12:8. Then the angel Yahshua that talked with me answered and said unto me, Knowest thou not what these be? And I said, No, my Yahshua. So Zechariah knew exactly who he was talking to. He wasn't talking to just any angel and says, Well, I don't know what your name is, so I'll call you my master. No. He wasn't instructed to do that. He was instructed to call him by name. Then he answered and spake unto me. Then Yahshua answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Yahshua unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by the might nor by the power, but by my spirit, saith Yahshua of the host." There it is. Anytime you read Yahshua of host, you add the article. Yahshua of the host. What host? The 144,000 host. That's what this prophecy is all about. They're the host. "Who art thou, O great man?" Or mountain. "Who art thou, O great mountain?" He's asked the question. "For who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain. And he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with the shoutings crying, Grace, grace unto it." So the question is that, "Who art thou, O great mountain? Before..." Then it says question mark. "Before there's a rubbable," and here's where the mistake was made here in verse 7. They put a question mark after a mountain. That's the same thing as putting a period. Then you're supposed to start the next sentence with a capital letter. But they started the next sentence with a small B, B-E-F-O-R-E, showing that's improper. You're supposed to put a comma after the word mountain, not a question mark. And then you're supposed to leave then the preposition before alone and just make a small letter. But you're only supposed to have a comma. And it's supposed to read like this. Who art thou, O great mountain, before the Zerubbabel? And then you're supposed to put the question mark at the end of the word Zerubbabel. Then it says, thou shalt become a plain. So what church, and then what great mountain is going to become a plain? You have to go to Daniel chapter 2. You got to read about that stone hewn out of the mountain without hands that grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. That stone becomes a great mountain. It was hewn out of a great mountain. And that great mountain was the Seventh-day Adventist church. So you put those two together. Thou shalt become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with the shoutings, crying, grace, grace unto it. Okay, let's read that verse 7 again in Zechariah 4. Who art thou, O great mountain? And mountain, the word mountain should be capitalized. Before thee, Zerubbabel, as the governor of Judah. Okay, so Zerubbabel coming out of Judean captivity, the 70-year captivity, was the governor of Judea. Okay, so who art thou, O great mountain? Who art thou? It's asking in prophecy, who are you, Seventh-day Adventist Church today? Who are you anyway? We can't put a name on you. Who are you? Before the Zerubbabel, thou shalt become a plain, governor of Judea. And he, who is this he? Zerubbabel, the governor of Judea, the antitypical governor of Judea, shall bring forth the headstone. So who is the antitypical governor of Judea today? It's the prophet that is interpreting. It's the prophet that's interpreting these prophecies. And that's who your antitypical governor of Judea is today. And he shall bring forth the headstone. And who is the headstone? Yeshua. The antitypical Yeshua. He's the headstone. Thereof with the shoutings, grace, grace, with the crying, grace, grace unto it. Now, isn't this amazing? Grace, grace unto this headstone. So who is this antitypical Zerubbabel today? Is the same thing as antitypical Elijah in Malachi 4. Now, in verse 8 of Zechariah 4, it says, moreover. Now, that word moreover means in addition to. Now, that's what they should have done. They should have put parentheses in the addition or hyphen. They should have put moreover hyphen or in the addition unto the word of the Yeshua came unto me said, for the hands of the Zerubbabel have laid the foundation. Verse 9. So now it says, the hands of the Zerubbabel has laid the foundation of the house. And then it's got semicolon. And there's a comma there. But if you delete the semicolon, it just says, for the hands of the Zerubbabel, antitypical Elijah, Zechariah 4:5, have laid the foundation of this house. What house? The house of the mountain of the house of Yahweh, which is Isaiah chapter 2, and Micah 4 talks about that house in prophecy. You need to write that down. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 1, 2, and 3, and Micah 4, 1 to 4, talks about this antitypical house of Zechariah 4, which is the house of David. Now we're going to turn to Amos chapter 9. We're going to start with verse 8. Behold, the eyes of the Yahweh, the Father, are upon the sinful kingdom. Now here's where the Adventist Church and prophecy in our day is called the sinful kingdom. And I will destroy it from off the face of the earth, saving that I will not utterly destroy the house of Jacob, which is today the house of David, or it's this house we just read about there in Zechariah 4, verse 9, 10. It says, saith to Yeshua, now it says, verse 9 of Amos 9, for lo, I will command, and I will shift the house of the Israel in the last days, which is the Seventh-day Adventist Church, among all the nations. And all the nations that the Adventist Church has any roots down, any church or anything, any possession, he's going to shift all of the corn, the remnant, out of the house of the Seventh-day Adventist Church all over the world, like this corn is sifted in a sieve, yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. Now how did they shift corn back then? They had a sieve back then. And they would be, big enough that the corn kernels would fall through, but all the chaff would stay in the strain. And so when they got through sifting the corn, they'd have some kind of a tarpaulin, the corn to fall on, where it wouldn't just fall back into the ground. And they would get the pure kernel of corn then, and they'd have it to put in the vessels, having taken the chaff out of it, but not a least grain of the corn would fall on the ground. All the sinners of my people shall die by the sword. Ho, ho, ho. All right. Now, what does it say in Revelation 19, verse 21? It says that very thing, that the remnant that's not destroyed and cast into the lake of fire with the beast and the false prophet that have deceived my people, the remnant that's left are going to be destroyed by the sword of his mouth, Yahshua's mouth, the man on the white horse, Revelation 19:21. All the sinners of my people shall die by the sword, which comes out of my mouth, Revelation 19:21, which say, actually the word that say, for the evil shall not overtake nor prevent us. What does it say there in Zephaniah chapter 1? He said he's going to visit those men that are settled on their leaves. That says that he will neither do evil nor do good. So he's going to visit those men. That's in Zephaniah chapter 1. And then, so he says, verse 11, Isaiah 9. So in that day, in the day of the 12th parabolic hour, the last hour of probationary time, I raise up the tabernacle of the David. Now this is Yahshua talking, that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise it up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old. Alright. In the type, who raised up the tabernacle of David that had fallen down the first time? It was those 50,000 that came back out of the 70-year captivity in the land of Chaldea, the land of Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon. Cyrus came and delivered them out financially and otherwise. And he delivered about 50,000 that went back, and they rebuilt and raised up the tabernacle of David that was fallen down. That was a type. And they literally raised it up and restored the walls and had true worship once again in that tabernacle that they didn't expect to do ever, but it happened. So now in the antitype, Yahshua said, I'm going to be there in the person in that day that we're in now, and it's got a star outside of that verse 11, and that star means this is talking about Yahshua. Is this star that's who he's talking about that's going to raise up this tabernacle. Anytime you see that star in my Bible, it's talking about Yahshua. And that day when I'll raise up the tabernacle of the David that is fallen. Okay. And close up the breaches thereof with the feast days, with the creation calendar. I'm going to close up and I'm going to have my minister ordain true worship in it, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old. That day, the antithetical house of the mountain of the Yahweh, Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, the house of David, antithetical house of the David, that they, the Judeans, the Judaites, my lawgiver, in Genesis 49:10, may possess the remnant of Edom. Alright, the remnant of Edom is your 144,000. The Esauites, it comes out of the Adventist Church. The Adventist Church has a remnant. Now we're going to just flip over a few verses here, a few chapters. No, one page. And we're going to turn to Obadiah. Only one chapter. And we're going to read a verse about 21. That was Jonah. We're going to flip back to Obadiah. I got that all wrong. I got to find Obadiah. So Obadiah, chapter 1, verse 20. Let's just read verse 19 through 21. And they of the south, that's the house of Judah, they occupied the southern land of Israel. The 10 tribes occupied the northern part of Israel. And they of the south, the Judaites, shall possess the mount of Esau, okay, which is the same antitypical Seventh-day Adventist church today. And they of the plain of the Philistines, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim of the north, Samaria, and Judea, and the fields of Samaria and Benjamin shall possess Gilead. Benjamin is the doorkeeper for Judah, and Gilead's center is the last feeding pasture. That was the third feeding pasture in their day when they came out of the wilderness and crossed over the Jordan. And there's the third feeding pasture for the Adventist Church today. Get Mount Gilead, 1970 to 2010 at Tremont, Texas, a 40-year period. And the captivity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites. Now, who were the Canaanites? They were Philistines, but they were descendants of Cain, and they were of the seed of Abraham that was born unto Ishmael by the flesh. Not born under Isaac by the Spirit. But they come from Abraham. Okay. And even unto Zarephath. And the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Sepharad, shall possess the cities of the south. And Sagers, the 144,000 first fruits harvest out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the 12th prayer by the hour, judgment of the living time, shall come upon the Mount Zion. And what is the Adventist Church called collectively? Her first identity in 1844 was called Mount Zion. To judge the Mount of Esau. So we're going to come upon the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the house of David, the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, and they're the only one that has a right to judge, the lawgiver. Genesis 49:10 is a prophecy for it. And the kingdom shall be the Yahshua's. And it should actually, the translator should say, and the kingdom will belong unto the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Let's do that again. And the kingdom will belong unto the antitypical David and Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Collectively together, representing the ensign. You have to have Yahshua and antitypical David together. That will represent the ensign. And then when you go and read about this ensign there, and I'll be this in Isaiah 30, and that's another story. But anyway, so there you have it. And let's go back to Amos chapter 9. It says in Amos chapter 9, verse 12, and they, that they may possess the remnant of Edom. So the Adventist Church is called Edom, and they have a remnant, the 144,000. It's in prophecy. That's Amos 9:12. And all of the heathen which are called by my name. Now isn't this amazing? Those heathen are those terrors that infiltrated the Seventh-day Adventist Church while men slept. Matthew 13:37-40. It says the terrors. While men slept, the enemy came and sowed terrors among the wheat and went his way. Those terrors were Adventists, infiltrators. They were the heathen that infiltrated the Adventist Church. And when did they infiltrate the Adventist Church? From 1888 until the harvest of the 144,000. And they knew Yahweh's name because it was introduced to them. As soon as they said, these heathen that are called by his name, Yahweh, Yahshua. And Yahshua is the one talking here. He said, these heathen that are called by my name. Well, you go to Isaiah chapter 4 and you read about these seven women that takes this hold of a skirt of him that is new. And we'll go and read that right now. Isaiah chapter 4. I'll find it here as soon as I do, and we'll be in shape here. And in that day, seven women shall take a hold of one man. That represents these seven Protestant churches, and Adventist is the seventh Protestant church, saying, we will eat our own bread. In other words, we'll invent our own doctrine to believe. And wear our own apparel. We'll wear man's apparel if we want to. We won't obey the law of Moses on that either. Only let us be called by thy name, Yahshua, to take away our reproach. That's the only reason why we want to be called by your name. The Adventist is telling that so today. These heathen and the Adventist Church. That's the only reason they want to be called by his name, to take away their reproach. They don't want to obey the sanctuary system, keep the feast day, be sanctified by obedience to their tithe paying faithfully and offerings and everything that's required. It says, in that day shall the branch of the Yahshua, this is in Isaiah 4 verse 2, in that day, in the 12th parabolic hour, shall the branch of the Yahshua be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. And who is this branch of the Yeshua? Well, all you got to do is go to Jeremiah 23, verses 1 through 5, and find out right quick. And it says in Jeremiah 23, verses 1 through 5, "Woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture." Woe be those Jesuit generals, starting with the Jesuit president of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Ted Wilson. Woe be unto those Adventist Jesuit infiltrators that are not even Adventists, that destroy the and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith the Yeshua. Therefore, thus saith the Yeshua, the King of Israel, against the pastors that feed my people. You Jesuit generals of the Catholic Church that has infiltrated the Adventist Church that feed my people, calling yourself ministers of the Yahweh, you have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith Yahshua. And I will gather the remnant, the 144,000, of my flock out of the Adventist Church in that day, out of the 12th prophetic hour, out of all the countries whither I have driven them, that's the four corners of the earth, and I will bring them again unto their foes, and they shall be fruitful and increase. And you can go to the prophecy of Isaiah 11 on that, bringing them from the four corners of the earth. And I will set up the shepherds, 144,000, prophets, priests, and kings. I will set up my chosen purified shepherds over them, which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed. Neither shall they be lacking, saith the Yeshua. Behold, the days come, saith the Yeshua, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. What is this righteous branch? This is none other but the Seventh-day Adventist 144,000. That's his the purified prophets, priests, and kings. That's his righteous branch. He's going to raise up unto the house of David. Okay. So now we're going to go back to Isaiah 4. Start at verse 2. And in that day shall the branch, the 144,000 of the Yeshua, because he's the one that had harvested them. Revelation 14, 1 to 5. The beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent comely for them that are escaped of Israel. Those that come through the first judgment of Ezekiel chapter 9, those that escape that judgment, then the branch of the Yeshua is going to be excellent and comely. So this is the first branch that Yahweh, through his Son, has harvested to start the 12th hour, because out of the Adventist Church. The next branch will be out of the Gentile world, and that's in Isaiah 66, 16 through 20. That's that harvest. And it shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. Oh my. Now you go read about Zechariah 14 more and find out about who is the one that's left living after that war. Only the righteous are left living during Zechariah 14. So if you're making notes, write that down. You go at the end of Isaiah chapter 4, verse 3. Okay. So in verse 4, Isaiah 4:4, when the Yeshua shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of the Yerushalayim from the midst thereof by the spirit of the judgment, and by the spirit of the burning, and that I shall will create upon every dwelling place of the Mount Zion, the purified house of David, in the 12th hour, and upon her assemblies a cloud, and a smoke by the day, and the shining of a flaming fire by the night. For upon all the glory shall be a defense, and there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime, from the heat, and for the place of the refuge, and for a covert from the storm, and from the rain. So we're going to have a repeat of what happened that 40 years in the wilderness, and that cloud followed them by the day and by the night. It sheltered them from the heat of the sun during the day, and it gave them a refuge from the falling rain and from the cold at night, and all four seasons of the year. It gave them light, that they had 2 million head of cattle. They had 600,000 footmen that had to have light to see. When they go to bed at night, you've got to have light, because you've got 2 million head of cattle that has to be bedded down around you. And that's how many they have, or they ended up with. You got to have light, take care of them 24/7. That's what that cloud is for. And there's your prophecy of that, what I said, in these last days. Let us now go back to Zechariah chapter 4. Let's read about these two witnesses, the two candlesticks, two witnesses, two candlesticks. Let's go. Okay, now in Zechariah 4, it says in verse 9, for the hands of the Zerubbabel and typical Elijah, Zechariah 4, 5, have laid the foundation of this house. And when did he lay this foundation? In the 12th parabolic hour that we're in right now, the one that's speaking to you now. His hand shall also finish it. So this antithetical Zerubbabel is going to finish this house as well as he laid the foundation for it. And thou shalt know that the Yeshua of the host, Yeshua the son of Yahweh, has sent me unto you. Now, it says in verse 10, for who hath despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet and the hand of the Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of the Yeshua, all right, which run to and fro through the whole earth. Okay. So these are the eyes of the Yeshua. Well, now, you go to Revelation chapter 5, and let's read about seven eyes there. Let's see what that Revelation chapter 5 is talking about those seven eyes. Verse 1. In Revelation 5, and I saw in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within. Now this is the judgment of the living, and in the 12th parabolic hour, this is the prophecy that John the Revelator saw on it, and on the backside sealed with the seven seals. Now John saw that this starting the judgment of the living is when the understanding of the book of Revelation from chapter 1 through 22 is made back to understand him in these last days. Because it was sealed with the book of the seven seals. But the time comes when the antitypical Elijah is going to be given the commission to open up this book of the seven seals. And I saw in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within, and on the backside sealed with the seven seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? Who's worthy? And no man in the heaven, nor in the earth, neither under the earth. Did you know that we have a planet in the hollow of this earth? Because you know we got people living right underneath this earth, which is only 800 miles thick. The ground surface of this is only 800 miles thick to the center of the earth. And then you got an inner earth that you got people living down there. That's another story. It's called the hollow earth. And no man in the heaven, nor in the earth, nor under the earth, was able for the opening of the book of the seven seals, neither for the looking thereon. And I wept much, because no man was found worthy for the opening and for the reading of the book, neither for the looking thereon. And one of the elders said unto me, weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of the Judah, which is Yahshua. The prophecy for that is Genesis chapter 49, verse 10. The root of David hath prevailed for the opening of the book of the seven seals, and for the loosing of the seven seals thereof. And I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne, and of the four beasts, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb as it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, that are the seven spirits of the Yahweh sent forth into all the earth. And he came and he took the book out of the right hand of him that sat upon the throne. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts, which is representative of all the periods of time from Adam clear down to our day, of those that representatives that have represented their own people and their generations from Adam clear down to the end of time. These four beasts has to be resurrected if they're going to send this judgment thrown here in the last days to represent their people. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of the odors, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sung a new song, saying, thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us unto the Father Yahweh by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our Yahweh kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. But the Adventists will tell you, Yahweh is going to reign on the earth after the millennium. No, this is a prophecy that takes place before the millennium begins. This is still in probationary time here. And earth and prophecy means the United States, first and foremost. And then when you use the word world, you're talking about everything across the waters, both east and west of the United States. That's all the nations in across those waters are called the world. I mean, they're inclusive of the earth, which makes up the whole world. But the earth and prophecy singles out the United States by itself. Okay. And I beheld and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the beast and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb. And I got a star outside of my verse that's 12 here, meaning that this talking about Yahshua is his Lamb. That worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. But you know what? This antithetical David, antithetical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, he's also endowed. Matter of fact, he's endowed first before Yahshua is in the end of time. to be endowed with riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. Now I can prove this by illustrative. And what is the first thing that it says to receive power? That's the first thing. And then the second thing that this antitypical Yahshua, and Yahshua, he also says, is an antitype of his own self, that he was a type. So Yahshua was a type. Then Revelation chapter 11 talks about him as the antitype. That what the Adventist church is going to do to him in the antitype in the 12th hour. So Yahshua is going to come a second time, and then he's going to receive power from the Father again, and he's going to have riches, and he's going to have wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And what is he going to do with all this? First thing he's going to do is going to give it to his antitypical servant, antitypical David, and he's going to receive the same thing. Well, I've already received my first endowment upon what they call riches. Yahweh's always shown me that he's given us a little sample of obtaining money when we need it for the right purpose. And so we've always started that program. We're able to finance the second ministry there in Africa because of the blessings that have come this last year. And so we got the mission going over there hopefully real strong. We got two faithful ministers over there. One goes by the name of Jeff White, and the other one goes by David Shari or David Shintu. I can't get that all straight, but I do know that that's the way it is on Facebook. So anyway, we're getting along pretty good with the study here. So it says in verse Isaiah 5:11, "And I beheld, and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the beast, and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands, saying, with a loud voice, Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth and such as are in the sea and all that are in them heard I saying, Blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. And the four beasts said, Amen, and the 24 elders fell down and worshipped him that liveth forever and ever." But this all takes place here in the 12th parabolic hour, folks. So, we are just the beginning now with the opening up of these prophecies to understand these things. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 11 and finish our sermon about these two witnesses. Revelation 11, "And it was given unto me..." Okay, we done read that. Revelation 11, and we're going to give verse 3. Where we just finished reading from Revelation chapter 5 about Yahshua coming with power, with riches, with blessing. But here it is right here in Revelation 11 about these two witnesses. "And I will give power unto my two witnesses," which is the Old and the New Testament now. Okay, that is flowing with their golden oil into that golden bowl on the 10th candlestick in Zechariah 4. "And they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in the sackcloth. 42 months. These are the two olive trees," my Old and New Testament prophecies flowing together, "and the two candlesticks," which the Old Testament is called a candlestick and the New Testament is called a candlestick, "standing before the Yahshua, the Son of the earth. And if any man shall hurt them, misinterpret the prophecies of the Old Testament and the New Testament, fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies, and if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. Okay. These have power to shut heaven. These two witnesses. So whoever has a true interpretation of the Old and the New Testament prophecies dovetailing together in the 12th parabolic hour, the antithetical Elijah that has these prophecies, then he has the power to shut heaven and it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over the waters to turn them to blood, and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. And this is the power that the house of David has been given to them. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit, this the old devil, shall make war against them and shall overcome them. Okay. Who's he going to overcome? He's going to overcome those wicked that would not believe the truth that the remnant was given here in the Adventist Church. He's going to overcome them, the heathen, that wouldn't accept the doctrine of the 23rd day prophecy, but instead they accepted the doctrine of the false Catholic doctrine of the three and one person of the Godhead, the Trinity of the Catholic Church. They accepted that in the face of the 23rd day prophecy that Ellen G. White was born with in 1844. And their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, the great Adventist Church, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt. But doesn't the General Conference President and all of his elders that are nothing but infiltrated Jesuits out of the Catholic Church, haven't they set up these here homosexual churches all over the world? Don't they endorse the transvestites and all of those Sodom and Gomorrahites? They endorse them and even let them have their own private churches called Seventh-day Adventist Churches. That's why the Adventist Church is called Sodom and Egypt today. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 years, and shall not suffer the dead bodies to be put in the grave. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them, and make merry, and shall send gifts one unto another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwell on the earth, and after 3.5 years, the spirit of the life from the Yahweh, the Father, the same spirit that entered into Yahweh's Son, in Hebrews 13:20, where it says, the Father hath raised his Son up from the dead by the power of the blood of the everlasting covenant. He raised him up from the dead. Okay. So he said, after 3.5 days, the spirit of the life from the Yahweh through the power of the blood of the everlasting covenant entered into them, and they stood up on their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them, and they heard a great voice from the heaven saying unto them, come up hither. And they ascended up into a cloud, into heaven, into the heaven in a cloud, and their enemies beheld them. Didn't Yahshua go up in a cloud when he went back to heaven? And what does this say in Acts chapter 2:11? You men of Galilee, why stand you here gazing up into heaven? This same Yahshua, which is taken up from you, shall so come in like manner as you see him go. And the same hour was there a great earthquake, verse 13. And the tenth part of the city fell, and in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000. Okay. And the remnant were affrighted and gave glory unto the Yahweh of the heaven. the tenth, the holy part, the 144,000. For the second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. Well, we're in the third woe period right now, here in the United States and in the whole world. We're in the third woe period. And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdom of our Yahshua, of our Yahweh the Father, and of his son Yahshua, and he shall reign forever and ever. So this is when the millennium begins. When that angel comes out of the temple, this is the beginning of the 7,000 year. This is the beginning of the millennium. So Yahshua is going to take this. He's already taken us to himself here on earth. He's already severed out a righteous land for us, and that's the land of Israel. Has been purified. It's where all the righteous are at. And so he's going to take them up into the clouds. 1 Thessalonians 4:16. And he's going to transport them then. Then he takes them to heaven. But the millennium starts right here on this earth. As soon as he gets all the wicked dead and kills all the wicked, at his last destruction, the man on the white horse, Revelation 19, verse 21, and the remnant was slain by the sword of his mouth that was left of all the wicked that was slain. And he's going to say, and then it says in Revelation 11, 16, and the 24 elders which sat before the Yahweh on their seats fell upon their faces and worshipped the Yahweh, saying, we give thee thanks, O Yahweh, Almighty, of which art and was and are to come, because thou hast taken unto thee thy power of thy great power and hast reigned. This is talking about Yahshua. Saying with the, we give thanks, O Yahshua, as the mighty Son of Yahweh, which art and was and art to come. And he's the one that comes a second time, Yahshua, to stand with the 144,000 upon Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1. Because thou hast taken unto thee thy great power and hast reigned. And the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants the prophets, which is your servants the prophets, that they've got to be resurrected from Adam clear on down to the end of time. And they find that resurrection in the parable of Matthew 20, verses 1 through 8 to 11. And unto the saints was 144,000, and them that fear thy name. If you fear Yahshua's name, then you obey the sanctuary system. Small and great, and service destroy them which destroy the earth. And he's going to destroy all these wicked men that would destroy the earth. So the wicked men are fast destroying the earth right now. And the temple of the Yahshua, or the Yahweh the Father, was opened in heaven. And there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament. And there was lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and a great hail. This brings in, if I said this hour, contact us at the 11th hour call, and if number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to